chapter 11, verses 1 through 16. Now, in chapter 11, verse 1, Paul says, "Be ye imitators of me, just as also I am of Christ." Now, that's connecting to what just happened in chapter 10. And that's why, you know, you might have a new paragraph starting in chapter 2. Just because they have a division there in your Bible it was all written as one letter. And so this thought is being carried over. Paul's saying, listen, you know, about the stumbling blocks, the grumbling blocks, and the humbling blocks. Listen, why don't you do what I'm doing? Be an imitator of me. And now in verse 2, he's making a transition to a topic. And it's important for us to understand concerning this topic that this is dealing with something that's away from the assembly. And the reason why that I say that is for two reasons. Number one, Paul just discussed the offenses that were taking place in the temples and in other people's homes outside of the church. He doesn't transition into the assembly until you get to verse 11, 17. You come together. He'll use when you meet together. From there he has an entire list of togetherness that they have within the assembly. That doesn't really begin until 11, verse 17. He's still dealing with stuff that is occurring outside the church. It's incredibly important to understand that before we cover the text. Look at verse 2 and 3. "Now I praise you because you remember me in everything and hold firmly to the traditions, just as I delivered them to you. But I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, and the man is the head of every woman, and God is the head of Christ." Paul praises them, and this is a word that they use in that culture quite a bit because people sought praise of others. It was a very materialistic culture that he was in. And he's praising them because they held to the traditions. The word is better understood, teachings. In some translations you have, it will actually say teachings. When a teaching is handed down to a next generation, when you hand off a teaching, it then becomes a tradition. So that's why you have traditions and or teachings in your version. But the teachings that were being passed down from one generation to another, in this case, has to deal with, what he's already covered is that, well, you have pride, you have division, immorality, idolatry, all these things Paul has addressed. But when he uses the word "but," the negative conjunction, it actually is pointing out that what is in the following text is what they failed to pass a tradition down on. That they're not teaching something right in regards to this. Even though the Corinthian church had many problems in that day, this particular one that he's addressing is one that they seem to be doing somewhat okay on. When Paul uses the word, now Paul's reminding them, by the way, that when he says every man and every woman, those words in the context are being used with husband and wife. Some of your versions might even say, the husband is the head of the wife. You know, I'm not the head of your wife, okay? That's not, you know, Paul made it very clear. The context is husband and wife here. And there are two examples where he says, the husband's the head of the wife, God is the head of Christ. The reason he's bringing both of those up is because to illustrate two points. One, the husband is the head of the wife. There are many in the religious world that have a problem with that. You know, I could, you know, just saying that, you know, we're broadcasting live. There might be somebody watching. There might be somebody says, ain't no man ahead of me, you know. Well, okay, your problem's with God at that point. If you have a husband, your husband is the head of you. It doesn't say dictate. It's the head. In any group of two, you can only have one leader and one follower. That's a fact. Well, you could have two followers. No, you can't because nobody's leading. Well, you could have two leaders. No, you can't. Nobody's following. In any group of two, one has to be the leader, one has to be the follower. That's a fact. And now, how did God decide in marriage who would be the leader? Did he like roll dice, cast lots? Was he say, okay, Adam, pick a number between 1 and 10? No, that wasn't what he did. Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 2, 13 and 14, for Adam was first formed, then Eve. Well, that's true. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman, being deceived, fell into transgression. In Genesis 3, verse 6, the woman saw that the tree was good to eat. It was a delight to the eyes, and she had a desire to make one wise. She ate, she took, ate, and gave it to her husband with her. She was in the leadership role at that point. And Paul is simply saying that that's how God designed it. And so very simply, Adam was first formed. Eve was first tempted. Now, God gave two reasons why the man is to be the leader of the family. And that's really what's at stake here. Who is leading the family? If we believe what the culture is telling us, we have a big problem. Big problem. And so it's confirmed to God's people that God first gave the commandment to not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil to the man. And because he wasn't leading the way he should have been, he was being led. And now God knew all this would happen, but he designed us. I wouldn't want to worship a God who didn't know everything, but we do have a God who knows everything. The second thing is, I'm telling you, that upsets me too. The kid's upset. Everybody's upset when we don't follow what God says. Just hang on, Junior. Now, the second thing is, God is the head of Christ. Jesus came in the flesh, but yielded to God in every way. And though he was tempted in every way as we are, yet without sin, he submitted to Christ. He submitted to God. You remember him in the Garden of Eden, or in the Garden of Gethsemane, Matthew 26, 39. He says, Father, if it's possible for this cup, this trial that I'm going through, that's going to be horrible, if it's possible for it to pass from me, please take it from me. But it's not my will, but thy will. It was always God's will for Jesus to die on the cross. Jesus knew it. He still came. He could have called 10,000 angels. He didn't, because he knew it had to be done, because it was in God's plan from the beginning. God the architect made it. Jesus built it. The Holy Spirit came by and threw in the finishing nails. That's how it works every time. And so he modeled submission to God in every way. Though he did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, he was God in the flesh, Emmanuel. He could have called it all off, but he said, that's not the plan. It's the Father's will. So Paul connects those two together. You know, if you have a problem with the husband being the leader, then you have a problem with God's plan about your salvation. You have a Christ problem. When Paul hooks them up together, Paul wants to lay it at the throne of God and say, okay, now you argue with God. Now, if you question Job, it doesn't go too well when you argue with God. Now, in verses 4 and 5, every man who has something on his head while praying or prophesying disgraces his head. But every woman who has her head uncovered while praying or prophesying disgraces her head. For she is the one and the same as the woman. But if it is disgraceful for the woman to have her hair cut off or her head shaved, let her cover her head. Now, when Christ was introduced to the civilization of the Roman Greco Empire, the societies, there was quite a contrast to the Judean Middle Eastern viewpoint from which Christ had come. Things were quite a bit different. Religious men and women from an idolatrous, immoral background all of a sudden receives this message from Christ, and wait a second, they're going to view things differently. Let's cover the men first. What was it like for the men in the pagan world when Christ, his message, showed up? First of all, the men of the pagan background, they were very idolatrous in their worship. They did not participate in the public ceremonies, their pagan worship services. The ones who were leading it, the men who were highly involved, did you know they had their head covered? That's exactly right. I think I have a picture up here of Augustus. You see how he has his head covering there? I'm going to read to you a quote from Clinton Arnold's commentary, quote, the covering of the man's head, called the capite veleto, was commonplace in the Roman religious cult. One explanation was that it helped reduce the noise of the animals being sacrificed. The statue of Augustus displayed at Corinth, which you have there, showed the emperor with his head covered. Similar situation you have in the, it's called the Era Pacis, the Altar of Peace, which that's what you see there. They had their head covered. The men covered their head. That wasn't what it was like in the old country, Jerusalem. That wasn't what it was like where the church had its infancy. But in the pagan world, men covered their head when they were worshiping God. It was their tradition. And then if you were a spiritual leader in the pagan world, that's if you didn't have your head covered, if you were the man, it was ridiculous. They would say, oh, wait a second, you need to cover your head. Well, the public perception that they were to model to the world was not of an uncovered head, but a covered head. Now, the women of the pagan world were quite different than the perception of Christianity early on in Judea. They often would decorate themselves as idols of their worship. They would have their hair decked with gold and pearls, and they'd have costly array. Some of their garments, they wanted to look like the idols that were being worshipped. In fact, there's a coin there. I have a lot of old coins. Here's a coin where that hair was just decked out big time. I'll get to that other picture in just a moment. But, I mean, they wanted to look like the idols. You know, if you worshipped Artemis, you would dress up in your shiny outfit. You would want to look just like her. So they would go there. Oh, that's a wonderful Artemis outfit that you have. They made a show of it. Their heads were not covered. Their heads were on display because they worshipped in an idolatrous fashion. Paul would even address this, and even Peter would address this. It was very common in the pagan world. Paul would say in 1 Timothy 2, verse 9 and 10, likewise also, I want women to adorn themselves in proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but rather the means of good works, as is proper for women making a claim to godliness. The idea was, Paul said, don't do what you used to do. You were called out. You were washed. You were sanctified. You were justified. Leave your idolatry behind. Peter said your adornment must not be merely external. Braiding of the hair, gold, wearing gold jewelry, putting on dresses. Let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. They had a serious problem. Because, see, this is not what Paul was used to. Paul the Apostle, who grew up in Tarsus, very conservative, who was educated in Jerusalem, very conservative. Do you know what the women wore in that culture? Yeah, looked just like a burqa. That's what they wore. They dressed so modestly. In fact, William Barclay says, quote, in Paul's time, the veil, the head covering, went right over the head and clear down to the feet. Now that's one big head covering. It's called a burqa today. If you go to the Middle East, those things are traditions handed down. They were stolen from the culture from which Islam was planted. We seem to pretend that a veil might be like just a little tiny cap. That wasn't what Paul was talking about. It was modesty. And in fact, Paul being from Tarsus, for a woman to dress up like one of these ornamental centers of pagan worship was horrible. So Christ's message comes to the Corinthians. Oh, saved by the blood of Christ, but we're going to keep our traditions in a way we want to. Paul says that's not good. Now keep in mind, he has not made a transition to the assembly yet. You just add up to, when you meet together, when you come together, circle all those in 1 Corinthians, you will see a pearl strand where he clearly addresses things that are in worship. Now, can principles outside of worship also be good in worship? Yes, they can be. But we have to understand that Paul wasn't talking about something very simple as a hat. He was talking about something that completely had modesty in mind. Now, look at verses 7 through 10. For a man ought to not have his head covered, since he is the image of the glory of God. But a woman is the glory of man. For man does not originate from the woman, and the woman not from the man. For indeed, man was not created for the woman's sake, but the woman for the man's sake. Therefore, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of angels. Now, there's a lot here. How we display ourselves, and I really have to communicate this. We even hold to traditions today. We hold to traditions today that we don't even know why we hold to them. And it can't be a good tradition unless if you know why you're doing it. You know, we guys don't wear hats in church. You ever notice people men take off their hats whenever there's prayer? And that's respectful. But this is really kind of the reason why. I probably shared this story with you before. I know Grant remembers this. Where is Grant? I saw him earlier. He's walking around somewhere, locking doors. There he is. Hi, Grant. He'll remember this. Years ago, when Andrew was on his freshman swim team, they have sort of a ritual for the freshmen. It was crazy hair week leading up to States. So what would happen is the first day, all the freshmen would have to dye their hair like this wacky color. Andrew, you remember how he had those long locks? He dyed his bozo red. Didn't like it. Okay? Second day, they had to shave it in a weird haircut. Andrew did a mohawk. So now he has a bozo red long mohawk. Many of you remember that? You thought Andrew was on drugs or something? But he wasn't. And then the third day, by Wednesday, he had a Fu Manchu red bozo-colored ponytail coming down. It looked hideous. He looked like a rat, is what he looked like. So, and then he forgot that there's midweek services. So he showed up in midweek services with a stocking cap on. And Grant walked over to Andrew. And he says, "Don't you know you're being disrespectful? Take off the hat." Andrew took off the hat, and Grant said, "Put it on, put it on." And so he was willing to break from tradition at that time. Now, Paul, when he mentions, see, we got to understand why we do certain things. Just doing them doesn't really mean that it's right or wrong. We need to understand why we do it. And you might have a particular reason why you do something, and to you, it's justified. But we just don't do something trying to hang on to ignorance as to why we do it. We get into danger when we end up doing something like that. And so, how we display ourselves in public, and this is the realm Paul's talking about. You go back and check it yourself. It says quite a bit. We either send the message to the world that we are, that men are the spiritual leaders of their family and women are their best supporters, the wives are. We send that message day in and day out. Outside of this building, how we behave in our marriages, they can tell who's boss in the family. And if we're not careful how we communicate that, we're going to be preaching the same message that the world is. And that is a danger. When it's opposite, bad things result. The angels understand this. Paul says, because of the angels. You see, in heaven, all angels are not the same. You have archangels and you have not archangels. You have archangels, Uriel, Raphael, Raguel, Michael, Sariel, Gabriel, Ramiel. Two of them are mentioned in the New Testament. There are stated strong angels of Revelation, implying that there are less strong angels out there. Angels know that there's leadership ranks within the angels. You have seraphim, cherubim, often. You have different ranks in the realms of heaven. Angels understand that. And angels look down, they say, well, guy, you're supposed to be the leader of your family. You need to send the message out to the world that you're going to love and care for that wife. She's going to love and support you. You're going to protect her. She's going to try to help uphold you. And Paul isn't saying that the man's a dictator. They live dependently on each other. He says the man, the woman was made for the man, but all men since that moment, Eve, the mother of all living, every man passed through the womb of a woman. They're both worked together. They're sending the message. What is that message? Paul said earlier, God is the head of Christ. Christ yielded to the plan of the Father. Though he was equal with God, he yielded to that plan and died a death for us. We preach the gospel even when we don't say a word. 11 and 12. However, in the Lord, neither is the woman independent of the man, nor the man independent of the woman. For as the woman originates from the man, so also the man has his birth through the woman. That's the point we just made. We're working together here. So if there's a wife out there, if there's a husband out there who's acting like Fidel Castro, God says, shame on you. Lead like you need to lead. If there's a woman out there who's rolling her head and say, you ain't gonna tell me what to do. I'm running the family. Christ says, bad girl. Yield to the leadership. You want a godly man? Help make one. You want a godly wife? Help make one. You want the world outside to see that there is an ordered structure of things. God's not the author of confusion. He's the author of peace. You want man to see that? Then follow what God says. Don't grab a different recipe and expect the chocolate chip cookies to turn out if you didn't include the chocolate chips. You can't do that. You want a recipe to work? Follow the recipe. 13 through 16. Paul says, judge for yourselves. Is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him? But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her? For her hair is given to her as a covering. But if one has inclined to be contentious, we have no other practice, nor have the churches of God. Take it all or take it nothing. Notice what lesson that nature teaches us. It's not that nature has a PowerPoint and says, the female species of the humanoids. You know, it's not saying that. Look at nature itself. Women tend to grow more hair, longer hair. They keep their hair longer. You don't see women, okay, in masses walking around looking like cue balls. You don't see that. You do see, on the other hand, this. Guys, this is what we're trying to avoid. We're fighting not to have that. We're fighting with everything. Paul says, look what nature's teaching you. Bosley can't cover up the truth. God designed physiology. Yeah, we got a whole bunch of leaders over here. These are real men. I must be a sissy. No. Okay. But the physiology God designed us with, if you just let things go, God says, I made you that way. I designed you. Will you take the hint from nature? If you don't listen to the angels, if you don't listen to the culture, will you just listen to nature? That leads to an important point. Can a woman's long hair serve as a covering for her hair? Or for her head? If you look back at the Garden of Eden, before they had clothes, I would say, yeah. I mean, they were naked and not ashamed. I would say that physiology probably said, yeah. Now, I don't know how long Eve's hair was. I don't know how long Adam's hair was, but he was just talking about Adam and Eve, and he's inspired, so I would think that you can connect the point. If one believes that depends on the culture and the people in the culture, yes, I believe so. If someone preferred to have a head covering in order to demonstrate that honor that God has, if a head covering communicates that point, then go for it. But, you know, I'll be real honest with you, Jana, if you ever try to get a mullet or something, I'm going to feel threatened. I am. It's not going to do good. If you shave your head and start wearing skater pants or something, we're going to talk. Okay? Because I want my woman to look like a woman. I want everybody to see Christ and God in our marriage. If I ever start looking like Fabio, Jana, get used to it. No. I flex the shirt, the suit's tearing off. Anyway. But guys need to look like guys. Women need to look like girls. Women. Okay? Yeah. I mean, that's just the perception. Image says a lot when we're outside of the church building. When we're not assembled, the message we send, if the woman looks like she's not yielding to the leadership of her husband, and the husband isn't lovingly taking care of the wife as the protector, then they're going to get mixed signals when we talk about Christ and the church. Things are going to be all messed up. Conclusion. We live in a world where the man is being emasculated from a spiritual influence to the next generation. It is messed up. He is portrayed by the media as incapable of being a strong influence by the family. If you listen to the media, they're saying guys are stupid. Husbands are stupid. They're just gullible. That's not the image of Christ. If you listen to the world, they'll tell you that a man must be a man. And in order to do that, he has to go out and have beer drinking, boating, fishing, all the activities, the poker games, all that. That's what guys do. That's not what Christ guys do. Christ guys, they take care of their families, starting with their wife, and then the extension of that, our children. Husbands, as leaders of their wives, have a bad rap and must come. They must stand up the way God designed us to do. We were designed to be the spiritual leaders of our family. And with that, we display to the world the message of Christ. We must not cave in to what the world is saying about man. Be the example. The woman, she has a desire, who has desired to be there of the family, of her husband. Bad things are going to happen. As Paul says, if a man desires the elder, if a man desires the office of an elder, he desires good work. Go back and read what will impend, what will stop him from desiring when the woman is taking his lead. He becomes spiritually emasculated. She must not allow the world-driven concept of yielding to her husband is a bad thing. Make him the leader of God he needs to be. She must not buy the world's argument that man, the man in her life, isn't capable of being the spiritual leader. I have talked to brothers before in that situation, and she says, he's not capable of leading. And she just rails on him. And I said, well, you have a decision to make. Will you train him to be the man of God he needs to be? Now she has a decision. They make decisions together. God will hold us accountable. She best not best the argument of the world that her display of her body. I'll be real honest with you. When a woman is not modestly covering her body, I don't know about you, but if my wife walked in wearing clothing that was revealing, that's my body. I don't want some guy looking at my wife's body. When we start proudly displaying, if the women are proudly displaying their body for others to see, that's not what Christ wants. Now, I'm not saying wear a burqa, but if you look like Lady Gaga, there's heap big trouble on the reservation. Modesty. And modesty is part of yielding to the husband. I have husbands every now and then. Like maybe their wife, their young couple, and they're dressing like they're a stunt double for Madonna. And the husband is upset. I don't like him telling me what I wear. I said, did you marry him? Yeah. If that husband says, I don't want someone else seeing my one flesh. Once he says that, I'll say, do you love him? Yes. Do you value that? Do you want him looking at other women? No? Well, then you need to keep the present wrapped up until you're at home. Don't let other men be distracted in their one flesh relationship because they're looking at somebody else. And men, make sure you lead in the family that you need to lead in. Very simply put, in closing, men, be the men of God that He wants on display for the world. And women, be the women of God that He wants on display in the world. Christians, shine forth as light among the crooked and perverse generation. Because if we don't get it right outside of this assembly, it's going to creep right in. If we dress two different ways, if we behave in two different ways, we're supposed to take what we have here and go out. But if we don't take seriously from without in the world, we're bringing it right back in. And then we have chaos. Be the men of God He's called us to be. Be the women of God He's called us to be. Be the Christian that God has called us to be. Think about that while we stand and sing for the invitation.